Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're trying to prep you as best we can for the upcoming Thursday, Friday, Saturday events. And I thought we'd punch up a guy we had on earlier this year, right around the combine time. And he gave us some great insight then, and we wanted to double back with him before the draft actually came around. Former NFL scout. He's got some scouting lieutenants with him these days. And he put together the SIS Football Rookie Handbook, just inundated with stats and facts and figures and metrics on guys on the collegiate level and how that will lend itself to NFL play when they get there. Our buddy Matt Manoogian joins us here on CBS Sports Radio. Matt, are you ready for the NFL draft?
Oh, yeah, I'm ready. I mean, I know it's Easter today, but, I mean, it's like we're getting ready for Christmas, opening up the gifts starting on Thursday night.
Understood. And as I mentioned, we had you on a couple of months ago. You guys had done a great deal of your work already, and a lot of your insight and book is based on the stats and the facts and the figures that they accumulated in their collegiate careers. But their collegiate career, their careers prior to their name being called out in the NFL draft continues, including with the combine and individual workouts and the like. As much effort and time as you guys put in for all your metric figuring during the season, the kind of season that the players have, how much do you have to add to your evaluation for a player's draft prospectus after the number crunching has ended from the regular season?
Well, so one great example of something that we can't account for in the SIS Football Rookie Handbook is somebody like Montez Sweat, who's a really good prospect. He's our number two edge rusher in the SIS Football Rookie Handbook. But he's got a heart condition, and some teams have taken him off their boards. And it's hard to, you know, I'm not a doctor, so it's hard to really know the specifics of how this should be playing out and how that'll affect his draft stock. But that's one of those things that we don't account for in the book. But on a much broader scale, I'm here to tell you that it's been a long time since we finished the college football season. These guys have not become appreciably better or worse football players than they were at that time. Ignore all the noise that's been going on the last couple of months, because that's the real information right there.
All right. Give us the best explanation you can in a minute and a half. Other than that, I think people will start to lose the ability to follow what you're saying. Your new statistic that you guys use, that you implemented, division of credit metrics as far as total points go, as an evaluative metric you use for the players.
Yeah, total points is really kind of our cream of the crop metric. So what we've done there is we take the concept of expected points added, which in football you can gain yards, but you could also gain touchdowns and you can also have turnovers. So we kind of convert that from yards all into points. How much was each play worth in terms of points? So a 30-yard gain might be worth about 2 points on average, et cetera, et cetera. So then once we know the point value that every play was worth on an individual basis, then we can actually calculate who on the play was responsible for those points. So if the quarterback, Mahomes, makes a great 60-yard pass down the field, he'll get a lot of the credit for those 2 points. Whereas if it's Tyreek Hill taking a bubble screen and breaking two tackles for a long run, he'll get more of that credit. So that's how total points works.
Can you balance offensive players and defensive players using the same metric?
So it's really interesting. You know, the metric is designed to take into account the results of the play. But as you know, sometimes you will have plays where the offensive player was more responsible than the defensive player or vice versa. So we account for that in total points by kind of having two different versions of total points. So there's the public version of total points, which divides everything up by the book. The value of the play is the value of the play, and everything's kind of split out. It's a descriptive statistic. We also have something we call predictive total points, which takes more into account, okay, you returned an interception for a touchdown, but that has to do with where you caught the interception much more than it has to do with your ability to return balls for scores and that to be predictive in the future. So we kind of split it out both ways, and more of the times when we're talking with our team clients, we're talking about those predictive total points.
How much of a standout was Kyler Murray with total points this year, the guy who is going to be the talk of the draft leading up to it for the next several days? And then depending on how the draft goes, he could be the talk one way or the other, someone who goes number one off the board or falls and goes much lower than what everyone expected for the last couple of months. How did he metric out for you?
Yeah, Kyler Murray is kind of crazy in terms of total points and expected points added. In our expected points added leaderboard, so looking at every play where the quarterback was involved, either the quarterback ran it himself or he passed the ball down the field, we have three quarterbacks who were over 100 total expected points added. Haskins at 137, Will Greer at 140. Kyler Murray was up at 237 expected points added, so literally off the charts in terms of what we talk about, what he produced on the field this past year.
That's one of the reasons why he is talked about as the potential first pick in the draft. Let me throw a couple other guys at you in that same grouping of total points. I have never, and I've been following the draft for 40-plus years, heard of a potential year where you have two first-round tight ends from the same school. Did that play itself out statistically and metric-wise, or is this evaluative of scouts and the like and what they've been able to see? How are these two Iowa kids both going to come off the board in their first 25 picks in the draft? If they're going to first round, it'll be first 32. But what I'm hearing is there's a real good chance they're both coming off the board in the first round. Did that show itself metric-wise on the field for Iowa this year?
Yeah, these guys are outrageously good. I think they're both worthy of first-round status, and for different reasons because they're different types of players. The surprising thing is that they were only on the field, the two of them together, on less than two-thirds of plays this year for Iowa. So a third of the time, at least one of them was on the bench this year. That's kind of just a shocking thing there in terms of, well, how is that possible? But looking into who these guys are, Hockenson is your traditional wide tight end. He's an inline tight end. He can be a run blocker for you, and then he can also split outside. He lined up outside 15% of the time this year, and he was a much stronger receiver versus zone coverage than versus man coverage. So you can imagine a safety blanket, you know, like your Jason Witten type tight end. We're not expecting this guy to go out and beat people necessarily with his athleticism, but he can be an inline blocker for us. And then when we start influencing those linebackers, he can go start to make plays for you. Now, Noah Fant, totally different guy. He was split out 30% of the time. So this guy is a slot wide receiver, you know, like one of the 16 guys that the Giants already have on their team. He's one of those, and he's much more of a threat against man than zone. So a 62% positive play rate against man coverage, just 52% against zone. That tells you what he is in terms of just a size-speed mismatch. That's Noah Fant. That's why he's going to go early.
All right. So we touched on a quarterback, couple tight ends. For me, the running back position is going to pale in comparison this year because there is no Saquon Barkley. And when Barkley came out last year, a big debate as to whether the Giants should have taken a quarterback or not. I had no problem with their decision because I thought he was a once-in-a-decade type back, and he sure as hell looked like that his first year in the league. I don't see any Saquon Barkleys, but I see some good, solid backs. Not sure that they merit first-round consideration, but second and third, we could see a run going on the backs. That's my eye. What do your metrics say about the group of running backs in this year's pack?
Yep, similar story. We think that Josh Jacobs is probably going to go in the first round, but that's more of the traditional debate. You know, is a running back worth a first rounder? He's no Saquon Barkley. Saquon Barkley, generational. You know, Todd Gurley, Adrian Peterson, the Saquon Barkley's right in that conversation. So he might be the best running back in the NFL already. Josh Jacobs, we think he'll be a solid starter for somebody next year. And then some guys, Devin Singletary, Damian Harris, Rodney Anderson, Trevion Williams. We could see a whole bunch of guys being real solid players. I like a Darrell Henderson. I think even as you get deeper into the draft, you can find guys there that can really, like you said, be good kind of pieces of a running back by committee approach.
One of the things I like about your way of rating players, ranking players, and using statistics the way you do it gives you something you can sink your teeth into and a number you can wrap your head around and get a hold of, because the age-old debate is going to kick in starting on Thursday night, carrying into Friday and Saturday, of need as compared to value. And common sense tells you you should always favor value over need, because if you don't draft a value, then you end up taking a player that doesn't deserve to be drafted where you end up drafting him, and you end up looking bad down the road, even if it fills a short-term need for you. Does it make it easier to stick to your draft board and go value rather than need if you're heavily involved with something like the SIS rankings that you have?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head right there. It's got to be value over need. It's got to. I know we've been staring at our team needs for the past several months in the offseason, and all the fans are out there thinking, okay, if we just fill in the offensive tackle and we fill in the defensive end, then we'll be good to go. And I believe that certain positions are more important than others. But that said, we need to take the best player available. We need to take whoever is going to be upgrading our roster and presenting an ability to improve our team. And it doesn't matter what we think our need is today, because we're one injury away from having an entirely different set of needs. And to your question, I think what you need to do when you stack your board is you do it vertically. So each position, you stack them in terms of how they compare to each other, and you slot them in terms of, this guy's a three-down starting-level player for us. This guy's only going to play on third down, but he's going to be really good situationally. Okay, this guy's just a backup-level player, but we think he could play on all three downs. You're figuring out how the guy is going to impact your team and make your team better. The grades correspond that way, and then you do the horizontal integration where you're integrating quarterbacks to running backs to receivers to offensive linemen. And hopefully, if your scale is working right, you know that your strong starter at left tackle is going to be more valuable than a strong starter at running back. So the grade's taking care of itself all over ahead of time. And then when you're there on draft day, for sure, I find that when you have a good process, the way it usually turns out is there's a guy staring you in the face. His sticker's just way up ahead of everybody else's on the wall. And that's the guy that you've got to go with, because you've done the work. And there's no panic at that point thinking, oh, we got to reach for a need. We've decided who the best value players were. We stuck to our guns, and the board spoke for itself.
Former NFL draft analyst, former scout for New Orleans Saints, now doing it for himself and giving his information out and or sharing his information.
Hey, I'm doing it for you.
I'm sure there's some NFL teams that say you can do it for us, too. The SIS Football Rookie Handbook, if you want background numbers and stats and figures on the best of the college players who are going to be called, have their name called over the Thursday, Friday, Saturday NFL draft. You got to get your hands on this. As a metrics-driven guy, you should have a strong opinion on this one. 10 to 15 years ago, I don't remember who first created it or when I first saw it, we got the first ever draft value chart that allowed you to put a value on a potential pick, and if you're going to make a deal, if you're going to trade draft pick, one high draft pick to lower draft picks, what's right value, and the like. Other teams have come up with their own chart since. This first one was kind of like adapted by everybody. Some people never bought into it that I've talked to over the years, but there have been varying NFL draft value charts. What are your thoughts on that? Was the first one right or a nice effort, not good enough? It has been refined properly. It's almost impossible to put something like that together. What's your take on draft value charts?
So the initial draft value chart that you talk about, put together by the Dallas Cowboys, that's the one that's still around. Every team still got it, but I would say every team has replaced it with probably their old model these days. Now, when I was in the league 5-10 years ago, there was kind of a prevalent also an analytical model that was kind of something that was shared amongst the teams, so everybody would know, okay, this is the analytical scale. It's different than the old Dallas Cowboys scale. In this, it's more advantageous to trade down according to the analytics scale rather than the Cowboys scale. And the way you could create this sort of thing is you look at the average value that a player creates at a particular position over time. You compare it to how much they're going to get paid, which you already know going into the draft, and you figure out what the relative value of each pick is. So in the old school chart, the number one overall pick is going to be worth way more than everything else combined. You know, think of it like the old Ricky Williams trade for the entire draft that Mike Dick did. or and in the analytical chart, you'll get less value in return. And the truth is, right now, where are we trading? We're trading in between these two levels. I think that the analytical chart is smarter. So that means when you see teams trade down most of the time, I'm going to be thinking that they're doing the right thing from a process standpoint. But, you know, there are always times you've got to go up and get your guy. You've got to be able to stick to your guns. But in general, teams are way worse at drafting than they think they are. And so the trade down combined with that value element from the analytics chart that you get there, it usually ends up being a better decision.
All right, Matt, last thing. I'm sure you've checked out everybody's mocks leading up to it. Everyone will come out with their final one Tuesday or Wednesday before the Thursday draft. And there may be some changes to it, but most people, like teams, have their draft board in order. If they're making changes at this stage, they're minor ones. They're not major ones by any stretch of the imagination. So you got a feel as to what people are thinking about players and where they're going to fall come draft night. Is there a player that, as per your analytical information, the way SIS has decided this player should perform when they get to the next level, that's just standing out as either vastly underrated or vastly overrated, that your numbers say, wait a minute, how do they have this? Everybody's got this guy going in the third round. He's a top 20 pick for me. Or this guy's going to go in the top 10. I wouldn't pick him with a first or a second round pick. Is there anybody whose numbers just don't jibe from what you're hearing others' opinions leading up to the draft with their mocks?
Yeah, one guy who's a corner from UTEP, actually, his name's Nick Needham, wasn't even invited to the combine. He's a guy that we absolutely love. I think he could become a starter in the NFL, and it's not even a sure thing if he's going to even be drafted. So that's one guy that definitely jumps out. Ed Oliver, if he doesn't go in the top 10, I think that's a steal for whoever gets him. And I still can't figure out Drew Lock and Daniel Jones. It sounds like they're going to go in the first round, and I cannot figure out why. I've watched a lot of film on them, and if you're just basing it off of that, it's hard to imagine that those guys are worth that kind of investment.
At least Locke's got the skills. He's got size. He's got arm strength. He's got some God-given talents. I don't know if he's going to be a winning quarterback in the league because I don't know enough about the kid. I watch him make some ill-advised throws. I'm not sure that he's cerebral enough to play in the league. But at least I see skills on him. I think Jones is getting too much credit for his cerebralness because I don't see near the talent. I think it's funny that you brought those two guys up because I have questions about both of them too. But for two very different reasons, I think one's got enough skill. Don't know if he's got enough savvy. And the other one may have savvy, but I don't think he's got enough skill.
Yeah, it's interesting when you look at it. I think if you look at Daniel Jones kind of on the hook, he's a pretty looking guy. I think, you know, he has a lot of the physical tools that you look for. I was a Duke alum, so, I mean, I've been watching this guy for a few years, and he's never put it together for me. He was never somebody that I thought led his team on the ACC level to victories. And it's hard for me to think that somebody's going to just magically, you know, flip and start leading an NFL team to victories. With Drew Lock, you know, he's got the huge arm, but the inconsistent short accuracy was what was really concerning for me there. Both these guys have put a lot of film on, and we've been able to see them really show who they are. Unlike the guys that are probably going to go first two, Kyler Murray and Dwayne Haskins, the only one-year starters, these guys have put out a lot of film. And unfortunately, it hasn't been good enough to the point where I'd really feel great about spending a first-round pick on them.
And that we agree. I'm glad to hear that your evaluation is the same as my evaluation because I trust yours. If somebody needs to get their hands on the SIS Football Rookie Handbook over the next couple of days before the draft, how do they best do it?
Get it on Amazon.com. You can go on Amazon, get your Prime shipping. It'll be at your door tomorrow or the next day. And there's also a Kindle version available if you want to get it immediately. Just download that.
The SIS Football Rookie Handbook 2019. Matt Manicharian, appreciate you coming on board. Enjoy Christmas, the three-day holiday that is the NFL draft. Thanks, Matt.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
Matt Manicharian here with us on CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.